If I remember to turn on the iPod, will be recorded. For those of you who listen in now, you just missed the introduction, but I was just talking about the syllabus and the website, which, if you're listening to this online, you've already found, so you don't need it. So, most lectures, when I remember, will be recorded. And they're on the website as MP3 files. So that day when you just absolutely can't get here or you're too sick, and we don't want you here when you're sick, do not breathe on me, please. Stay home, listen on the web. It won't be quite the same. It won't be as cozy. It won't have that interactive part, but it will be better than missing it entirely. What else is on the website? I guess that's it. Okay, at this point. We'll update that regularly. There are two texts for the course. This is a very inexpensive course. For that, I'm very proud. The Galinsky book, called The Six Stages of Parenthood, a paperback even, and I think there are even used copies. So, did anybody look in the bookstore? Is it actually there? There. You don't need it until early next month, but get it anyway before they run out of it or send it back to the publisher. And it's fun reading, so you might just pick it up and read it when you can't stand the textbooks for your other courses. The other book is by my favorite author, and it is literally unpublished at the moment, and Kinko's will spit it out for us hopefully by Monday. And it's always tempting, as you know, to blame other people. But the reason that they won't have it printed until Monday is that I didn't get it to them in time for them to print it out for today. So it's my fault, and I take responsibility for that. It's the only mistake I'm going to make this year. When that is available, and when I know that it's available, it also is a paperback, and I don't know what the price will be. We print it and sell it at cost. We don't make any profit. I'm sorry, Julie. No parties this year. But I also don't take a loss on it. So that's, I print the copies, divide by the number of copies what they charge me, and that's what I charge you. It'll be $7 or $8, something in that range. But they didn't have a final figure for me. And I take checks or cash for that, money orders, but not fried chicken or things of that sort. So, although maybe this week I would, actually. My wife is out of the country for several weeks, so I'm on my own for eating, which means I'm losing weight. There will be other readings, but they are on reserve, on electronic reserve through Bailey Howe. And there is only one of those for the first month, and we'll get to that. How many of you have not had a course yet that had electronic readings? Okay, so figure out from somebody quickly how to access readings online through Bailey Howe. And you'll see, it's fairly simple. I think the process works. Am I right? Does it work reasonably well now? Unless you're off campus on a dial-up with a slow connection, and then you may have some difficulty accessing it. It just takes a long time. Okay, what are you supposed to do? Be here and participate in class discussion. I realize that looks a little strange with 145 people in the room, how we'll have class discussion. But we will, occasionally. I will invite you to tell me when I'm wrong, question what I say, ask questions. I invite questions anytime. I prefer not to have really, really significant questions asked in the 1 minute before lecture when I'm trying to bring my head into the room. So if you email me, if you have a question, email me before and I can deal with it then in class. Catch me after. I'll usually stick around for a few minutes. come see me, you know, send me postcards, whatever works, to ask questions. But in class, we will have occasional discussion exercises where you get to talk to each other, and I will occasionally roam the room with my microphone and invite your comments and embarrass you, but not too much. Read whatever is assigned for the particular day, and we'll get to that schedule. Try to read things in advance so that you'll have some idea of where we're going, what I'm going to be talking about. If you've looked at it in advance, it makes more sense than if you try to sort it out from my lectures, which may or may not be clear and well organized. If you've read the reading before you get here, you'll be better prepared for what I'm going to say. There will be exercises in class. We do random writing assignments, usually based on the reading, sometimes at the beginning of class, sometimes at the end of class, based on lecture. For those, you have to be here to do them because they're a check on attendance and feedback for me about what people have comprehended through the lecture. So for those informal exercises, which are usually worth just a couple or three points, there's no makeup. You're either here and do them or you're not. And that's the cost of not being here. There'll be an exam on March 6th. Which we'll talk about as we go through it. There's a final exam on Tuesday, May 9th at 4. That will be in here, and it will cover the entire course. The way we do the evaluation in this course is that you collect points. Each of the exercises and writing assignments and the exams is worth a particular number of possible points. You collect those points through the semester. At the end of the semester, we draw a nice big distribution, and the people who have the most points get the highest grade. The people who have the lowest points should have studied harder and been in class. It's a very simple system, and we don't predetermine how many points you need for a particular grade because it's competitive among you. So the people who get the most points get the highest grade. It's a simple-minded system, and that's why I use it, because I'm simple-minded, and it helps me not make any of the invalid assumptions that people make with other kinds of grading systems. So there's nothing about you have to get 90% to get an A or any of that in here, because there's no validity to that kind of system anyway. Office hours. Julie will have office hours on Wednesday from 11 to 1. How many of you can make it then? Good choice. All right. We're not expecting large groups of people at office hours on Wednesday. I guess you can do other stuff. You can clean my office or something. So because of that, she also has office hours by appointment, and she has her email down at the bottom as well as at the top, so there's no excuse for not having her email or her phone. Email is faster. She checks that regularly because just because. And she forgets about the telephone. Okay. The second page describes what this course is about, and I'm not going to go over that specifically with you, but I'll just point out a couple of things on that page. One is, we are going to talk about families this semester, but in order to do that, we're going to spend the first few weeks learning a language for talking about families and development. And this is a language, it's a framework that was created by a man named Yuri Bronfenbrenner. You will learn to pronounce and spell his name. Bronfenbrenner was a professor at Cornell for many years in human development and died this past summer. And he created a very powerful framework for talking about the context the ecosystem, the environment, the social environment that people develop in, and relating it to the process of development. So one of our tasks this semester is for you to learn that system, that set of concepts and principles to explain development in context. My task is to brainwash you so that by the time you finish this course, you will never again, ever, be able to think about people or development without thinking about Bronfenbrenner's concepts. And so I'm just going to try to create a stable set of schemes in your mind that you will use the rest of your life. How's that for a grandiose notion? Okay. We will do it. And then for some of you, we will reinforce that next semester when you take the social context of human development, which some of you will. And we'll look at other aspects of the context using Bronfenbrenner. And if you're a human development and family studies major or a major concentrator, this is the first step in several in learning to think developmentologically. And it works. And people who learn that system discover when they go out into the real world that they have a very powerful framework for analyzing social situations and relationships, families, agencies, the world. And they apply it the rest of their lives so far. Okay. In the middle of page 2, how to get an A. And that's a direct implication of the fact that my purpose in this is to brainwash you. Just be brainwashed. Just let it happen. Use Bronfenbrenner, use the concepts. Every time you read something for this course, every time you write something for this course, every time you tackle an exam question or one of the writing exercises, just think Bronfenbrenner and you're pretty much guaranteed to get an A, because you get lots of points because that's what we're looking for. Pretty simple. I'll try not to hide anything from you. I don't do trick questions, not intentionally anyway. I'll tell you every step of the way what I want you to know, and if there's any question about that anytime, just ask me and I'll tell you what the answers are. I know you've had courses, or you will have courses, where there's a game. It's called try to figure out what the professor really thinks. And the professor does everything possible to keep you from learning that. That's not what I'm about. So I just want you to leave here in May thinking like I do. So try it. You may not like it, but you'll get a good grade. Okay, the third page introduces several possible things, how we do the grades when the exam is, the eco exam. In the middle, my job. The reason I don't keep things from you secret is that my job is to help you learn everything that there is to learn in this course. And anything that Julie or I can do to help you learn the stuff that you need to learn, beyond writing your papers for you, or short of, right? We won't write your papers for you. We won't take your exams for you. You really do have to put the stuff in your head and put it out in some form. But anything that we can do to help you get it in your head and get it out in a reasonable form, we will do. If you have any special needs for that process, if you need to use the Proctoring Center to take the exams, we'll do that. If you need a note taker, we'll do that. If you need to look at the overheads, they'll be on the website. If you need to meet with Julie or with me to go over stuff, we'll do that. That's what we get paid for. Well, I do. Yeah, you get paid. Okay. Julie's a graduate student in counseling. And you can just come and talk to her, and she can practice her counseling skills on you, too, if you want. Yeah. If you're having trouble with your boyfriend, girlfriend, roommate. She's good. Maybe. She's got to be good, and she has very high ego strength because she puts up with me. and my attempts to embarrass her daily. I'll try not to do that. If you think I'm being too rough on her at any point, let me know and I'll ease up for a few minutes. Speaking of doing what we can to help you learn, I would like somebody to volunteer to be a note taker. And that's a process some of you know about through the Access program, the note-taking service. You take notes. If you're going to be here every time and you have legible handwriting and you stay awake and pay attention and take good notes, you can take those notes to be copied. They scan your notes, I think, and make them available to students who need to not try to be taking notes while they're listening, because some of us have difficulty multitasking. And if you'd like to do that, come up after class and show me your notes, and I'll pick somebody who's got complete notes and clear handwriting. And the reward for that is a gift certificate from the store, I think. That's what they're doing again this semester, the UVM store, for $20 or $25. It's a pittance, but it, you know, makes you feel better for having done it. Website, email, read that special note on page 4. If you're using Hotmail, Yahoo, AOL, any of those, one of the things that always happens, you all know about UVM EDU, you have to use that because that's what we use. You have to have an account. You automatically have an account, but you have to forward it if you don't want to. If you want to use AOL or any of those, you have to forward your account to that, and you have to keep your limit. You have to keep within your limit on whatever you're using. Otherwise, I send you a note saying something really important, and I get a bounce back that says, you can't get my note because you're over your limit, and then I have no way to get in touch with you. So when I email the class, I will email through the registrar, and that's automatically to your UVM EDU. Okay, page 5 and 6 give you the outline. The operative word here is approximate schedule. You will watch me get either behind or ahead. Have I ever been ahead of schedule? No. Okay. You'll watch me get behind schedule and then scamper to catch up. The topics, the dates are down the side, the topics in the middle, and the reading assignments are on the right. So that's what you ought to be reading. How the heck are you going to read for Monday if you can't get the text before Monday? You can't. So you will have to scamper to catch up, and I'm sorry about that, but we'll manage. It looks big, sections 1 to 5. I think it's a total of 12 pages or something like that, so it's not a big problem. Okay? And you'll see then that the reading for the first month is the Developology book, with the exception of one reading by Garbarino. And then the rest, after we learn the language, then we're going to tackle the fun stuff about families, and that will be the rest of the course, and that's where the fun reading comes in, and that's reading by other people. Okay, page 7, exercises. As we go through this first month, there are 4 things that we want you to write. They're relatively simple and short, but they're an opportunity to demonstrate that you are understanding the pieces of the language that we're trying to get across. So put those dates in your date book, and turn them in when they're due. We will talk about each one in advance so you'll have some guidance. And then a bit later in March, there's another that you keep going. You've got assignments 4 and 5. And when we get to assignment 5, we'll point out that it doesn't say that it's required, and it's not required. But we do have to warn you that if you do it, you get points toward your final grade. If you don't do it, you don't get those points, and that means that people who do it have more points than people who don't do it. But we make it optional so that you have a choice. And for some people, you know, taking the course, pass, no pass, you know, you're pretty sure you're going to pass it anyway, so skipping one assignment isn't going to hurt you any. On the other hand, if you're intent on getting an A, I wouldn't skip any major assignment, especially not one worth 25 points. When we get to the ECHO exam, page 10 will be useful. You'll see a lot of strange words there, but it's my attempt to let you know what it is I want you to know. Pages 11 and 12 are the reading assignments in alphabetical order for March and April, February, March, and April. And if you go back to the schedule, you'll see when you're supposed to read each one. They're listed by author. Yes?
Are these the ones that are on e-reserve?
Those are the ones that are on e-reserve. Except for, in the middle of page 11 is Galinsky, and that's the six stages of parenthood. Everything else there should be on e-reserve eventually. They're not yet. The library will get them up. And if at any time you are looking for a reading and have difficulty finding it, or if you discover that it's illegible or they've left pages out, please alert me immediately so that we can get that corrected. The library is very good about correcting things, but at the beginning of the semester, sometimes when they're scanning things in or downloading them, they get messed up. Page 13 has the final assignment due April 19th. And all of the assignments are designed to let you practice thinking using the developmental principles that we're going to be learning. So everything written is based on that. Okay. The back page you can take notes on. Questions? You will come up with questions later. And when you do, we'll answer them. I'm going to send around a roster. Just make sure it gets through the room. Just check off if you're here. And if you're not here, don't do anything. If you're not on the roster but you're here, that means you're not enrolled. Add your name at the end and then make sure that you do get enrolled. Who's here? Okay, who? Yes, you're here. Thank you. How many of you are first-year students? Second year? Third? Fourth? Post-bac? No post-bac. How many of you are twins? Two twins? Identical or fraternal?
Identical.
Fraternal. Fraternal. Okay. One of each. No triplets? How many of you are only children? Small number. Because people who have siblings are interested in families. If you're an only child, some of you are. How many of you have one sibling? Two? Three? Four? Five? Think. Count. Yeah. She looked startled that her hand was up. Sorry. Where did I stop? Six? Six siblings? Seven? Anybody more than seven?
I have eight.
Eight siblings? Ten? Going once? Going twice? You win. Okay. Are you the youngest, oldest, or in the middle?
In the middle.
In the middle, okay. Gee, one more and you could have had your own football. No, you have 10. That makes 11.
That's 11.
Football team. Okay. That's your own. But you have to play both ways. How many of you were raised in a human family? This is good. Okay. It gives you some background for this course to think about what you might be encountering. How many of you have grandparents? Okay. One of the things I will very often do in this class is ask personal questions such as the following. There is a rule in this class. You don't have to answer any question that you don't want to answer. Okay, so if I ask how many of you have spent time in prison, things like, you don't have to raise your hands. You may always pass, and there's no penalty for passing. You just skew my information a little bit, and that's fine. How many of you are adopted? 1, 2, 3? Okay. How many of you have children? My reaction is because typically there are parents in this class. Returning students, older students, people who have kids. We have had grandparents in this class. And I depend on them. They're very important because sometimes I say things that people who don't have children don't believe. And I look to the people who have children because they're usually sitting there going, oh yeah, oh yeah, uh-huh, yeah. And they give me great examples of their experiences when we're talking about parenting. And I'm not going to get that. It also means nobody's going to tell me I'm wrong. Nobody with authority. If you don't have children, I can't be wrong, right? Okay, that's close. How many of you have ever lived with somebody who has a child? How many of you have ever lived with somebody who has a child? This is a trick question.
We all do.
Right. Yeah, if you lived with your parent. Right. All right, okay. You got it. Okay, yes. Usually not too hard to keep up with me, except when I make those sharp left turns without signaling, which I will do regularly. That's why we record, so we can go back and you can think, how did he do that? Where did he go? I'm lost. And that's why we have the recordings. So we can document the fact that I totally changed the subject without any warning. Human development and family studies majors. Early childhood majors, elementary education, secondary education, physical education. Varsity athletes. Art education, did I say that? Art education, sociology, social work, psychology, engineering. Business, anthropology, undecided. Don't know how many siblings you have, and you're undecided. You're gonna talk to Julie. Sorry. Who else? Who did I miss? Major wise. Family and consumer science. How did I do that?
Women's studies.
Political science. Is that it? Okay. How many are from Vermont? New Jersey. And what's your major? I skipped middle level. I'm sorry. Okay. I could see being in political science and being from New Jersey, those kind of go together. Not from the United States? Where from? No. Okay. How many of you ski? Lousy season. It's good. You'll be in class. When I came to Vermont many years ago, before most of you were born, before any of you were born, I had a friend from graduate school in Minnesota who had come here the year before I did. He was on the psychology faculty. And when we got together at the beginning of my first year, his second year, he said, just one thing I want to warn you about, that there's a very discouraging thing that happens here, is that you're on your way to class and you meet your students carrying their skis going the other way. Don't tell me. All right. They're probably, oh, I know. How many of you have parents who are divorced? Yeah, we're gonna do that. How many of you are children of a second marriage? Third marriage? No? Okay. How many of you have very complicated families? Okay. Good. That almost makes up for not having any parents in the room. So we'll rely on you to come up with examples. How many of you think you have a very perfect family? Okay, now do you feel better? Okay, see, there are about 3 perfect families out of 145 here. So you thought yours was the only one that wasn't perfect. We're going to look at many of the ways in which families are and are not perfect, but we're not a family pathology class, although maybe we will be. Okay, what are we going to do? Let's start doing it. I need to turn down the lights, right? And zoom in. Oh, I did it right. Okay. This course is called The Family Context of Human Development, so what does that mean we're going to look at? We're going to do a lot this semester, a lot of taking things apart and looking at what the pieces mean and then putting them back together so that we understand the complexity. So what I've done is take the title apart, and somehow we have to deal with humans. Okay, so this course is not about penguins or other species. In fact, I think we can get through almost the entire semester without ever looking at non-human species. Maybe. I probably will end up talking about penguins. How many of you have seen The March of the Penguins? Right. Okay. What I have to share with you at some point when we're talking about it is an analysis of the movie that I heard at a conference in November by a person who teaches film as communication, and what she does is point out that there's not much connection between the narration and what's actually going on, that the film is actually very subversive about families and probably represents values that some people who love the film disagree with but think the film represents. So I'll explain that as we go on. All right, but we're going to talk about humans. We're going to talk about development. So we're going to be thinking about people changing. We have to do that as we talk about families and whatever the context is. So then we can put those words together, and some of you have fairly good background in human development. Okay. That's what HDFS 5 was about, in case you forgot over the break. And I'm assuming that all of you have some background in human development of some sort, Psych 1, a little sociology, just enough to have some social science concepts. We won't be looking at anything that is particularly technically detailed about human development in this course. We just need to keep in mind that people keep changing, and as they change, their relationships change. Human families. Then we can put together human development in families, and that's really what the course is about. It's about how human development takes place within families. And the context, which in our case means the environment or the ecosystem, both physical and social. I mean it both ways. We're talking about the physical environment that we're in and the social environment that we're in. And we'll think about that as a system, which should be fairly comfortable for you to think about systems. We'll talk about the characteristics of them. And we're going to look at the family as a context for development. That is, for individuals, individuals are developing within families. Now, what gets complicated about families is that everybody in the family is developing. So you thought human development across the lifespan was complex because we were looking at a person changing over time. When we look at families, we're looking at everybody in the family changing across time. That's why they're so difficult to talk about and to conceptualize. We're also going to be talking about the family in its context, because families exist in a social and physical context. So we're going to be using that term in both ways. We're going to look at the family as a context for individual development, that is, the individuals are developing within the context of the family. The family exists in a context that is larger than itself, that influences how it behaves. Okay, breaking that down a little bit more, some of the important concepts to keep in mind. In human development, we tend to think about stages of development: infancy, childhood, adolescence, middle age, old age, senescence. Because we think about people across the lifespan, and that's familiar territory for most of you, at least intuitively. The span and the stages. Between the stages, there are transitions. And what's really fun about looking at people is that we're constantly going through changes. We're constantly going through transitions. Leaving home is a transition. Having a child is a transition. Moving in with somebody is a transition. Having a parent die is a transition. Having a sibling born. All of those change the people who are experiencing the transitions. We're going to be talking a lot about transitions. It's an important concept in this course. And we're going to try to remember that people are biological organisms. We can talk about their biological development. We go through puberty. We get old. We turn gray. We get pregnant. It's a biological change. Our thinking changes as we develop. Our psychosocial characteristics change, how we see ourselves, how we present ourselves, our self-concepts change, and our relationships change. We add relationships, we change relationships, we lose relationships. So the process of development across the lifespan is very complex. In HDFS 5, we looked at some of that complexity and skimmed the surface of it. There's much more that we could cover, but that was an introduction.